Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt, brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series. That's toughmantri.com. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shop. By Polar, blood, sweat, and data. By CaliforniaTriathlon.org, five great 2019 race options, including Viking Dash Trail Run LA on April 7th. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, this last year we sent out 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. You can help out at ChallengedAthletes.org, and you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or at Babbittville.com. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest is in school right now at Purdue, and his name is Sean English. Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Bob. How about yourself?
I'm doing wonderfully, and the more I've read about your story, you're an amazing young man. Take me back early April 2017. Well, actually, before that, were you always a runner? It sounds like you started running when you were back in kindergarten.
Yeah, that's true. I did always run. My dad was a runner. Almost went to the Olympic trials before an injury of his own. I ran at Purdue, the school that I'm at now. I ran at my high school and has the record for all of the records there. So I was looking to beat those. I was looking to follow in his footsteps and run at Purdue. I was looking to warm up to him and go to the Olympics.
But, wow.
Unfortunately, I never got that chance.
So what do you think your special was? The 400? Was that your event?
Oh, no, I did the mile. I only did the 400 in a specific race because I don't know if I could go four laps around the track.
Exactly. So the mile, what was your PR?
I was 429 as a sophomore.
Wow.
In high school.
Way to go, man. And
thank you.
The goal was to try to run at Purdue?
Yes, that was the goal. Some coaches were talking to me. I was doing most of the talking with them. And they didn't really offer a lot of people as a sophomore, which makes sense because you still have growing and growth spurts and all that. So there was a high possibility, but nothing was set in stone. So,
Were you also running cross country?
I was also running cross country in the fall as well, yes.
Nice. So take me back to, and this is not that long ago, it's early April 2017. You and the family are heading to your church for, I think, a school event of some sort. Take me through what happened.
So my family and I were going to Mass in downtown Detroit where I was going to go sing in the choir. And right in front of us, we saw a car flip over. So what gets confused in this situation is a lot of people think we just stopped for a car that we saw, but we actually visibly saw the car in front of us do a whole 360 flip.
Wow, so you were there right when it happened.
Yes, we were there right when it happened. That's why it was such an urgent thing to do to get out of the car and to try and help.
Right. And so
because
you,
we had that connection.
Of course. You just watched it happen. You want to make sure. And so you guys pull over, and also Dr. Cynthia Ray has pulled over as well. And she's a doctor, and she pulls over, and you guys pull over, and what happened next?
Yeah, so we both pull over, and she's behind us. We're a little bit closer to the actual car itself, and I remember everything. I remember getting out of the car. I remember looking at her, saw that she was walking over. She was a doctor. I could tell by what she was wearing because she was on her way to work, and I looked to my left. And then the next 30 seconds of my life are, like, blanked out. And then I remember waking up on the floor, and I don't see this woman anymore. It was really confusing. But what happened was my brain chose to forget what happened.
Which is good.
Because of shock, which is very good. But I was not knocked out, and no one actually saw what happened. So we don't know exactly how the car hit Dr. Ray, and then it hit myself, or what happened. We can just go off of the damages that were done to our bodies and to the car. But other than that, I don't really remember exactly what happened to Dr. Cynthia Ray, but in the end of the story, she does pass away around 5 days later from complications in the hospital. She had a very serious brain bleed, and she never recovered.
So, wow.
Yeah, never.
What happened to the, was there six people in that rollover?
Yeah, there were six people in that Jeep. They were actually fine. It was quoted that they were only minor scrapes and bruises, which is amazing.
Really?
For them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they actually did a fundraiser for me at a local Buffalo Wild Wings, just to raise some money for me, because they heard about the story and they had that connection too, because they're also involved.
Sure.
So they were really, really nice people, but we could have just kept driving and they would have been fine, but you know, I don't have any regrets. I didn't know that in the beginning. Even if I did, I don't know if I would have changed my mind. My family and I would have kept driving that day.
And but your parents were okay. They got out of the car too?
Yeah, so they got out of the car and went to like physically help the people, and I got out of the car and I was calling 911. So I had to dial 911 in the back seat, make sure it was ringing, and then once I heard it ringing, then I got out of the car.
And that's when
I was
hit.
That's when I got hit. Yeah, I was probably 5 seconds behind my parents.
Wow. And so you go to the hospital, six surgeries, a broken pelvis and legs. You end up losing your right leg below the knee. When you found out you were going to lose your leg below the knee, what were your original thoughts?
Well, it wasn't. They didn't. Luckily, the doctors didn't sugarcoat anything. I told them that I can take whatever they can throw at me as long as they tell me there's a silver lining and I can get back to what I want to do. And they told me you can get this foot prosthetic, because the foot was the only thing that was injured for me. They said that you could get this foot prosthetic or you can get this below knee amputation. And I said, what's best for me in the long run? And they said below knee amputation. And then I signed the form and then they took me to surgery a few hours later.
Was that hard for your parents when you made that decision?
Yeah, because they're over here doing research, typing in Google, how did you spell that word? And I'm just saying yes.
Yeah, so, how do you spell prosthetic? Wait, what?
Yeah. And I just said yes. I said, where do I sign? So I can't eat for 12 hours. I understand. Got it. And they were surprised that I made that decision that quickly, but I just needed to hear what the long-term solution was going to be.
And really, the options were, with a prosthetic foot, you'd sort of be limping on that. But if you got a amputation, you could really run.
Yes, exactly.
Now, were you able to go online and see some videos of people running, or did you know from seeing past Paralympians on TV?
Yeah, I saw I heard about the Hunter Woodhull story, the amazing double amputee, first college athlete to get it. Yep, D1. I talked with Hunter before he reached out to me. Talked to Richard Brown, another Paralympian. Of course, I saw Oscar Pistorius on that one Olympics that one year. So I've seen these people do it, but it was always kind of, when I saw them do it, it was like a movie to me. Like,
right.
Those people are insane. That's not real. Those people aren't real people. Like, that's what they're doing. It was insane. And then the closer and closer that became my reality, I started to realize that, well, if they can do it, I can do it. It's not just something I can look at and go, well, good for them. I can look at and go, I want to do that as well.
What was fascinating to me is the driver, this Keith Martin, who ended up getting a long sentence. He was driving under the influence of drugs at the time that he hit you guys, hit both you and killed Cynthia Ray. When you were in court for his sentencing, you were amazing. I mean, you were forgiving him. You were hoping that when he does his time, that he turns his life around. You told him that you didn't, you know, there was no hate there, that you hope the best for him. That's, you are way more mature than most of us would be, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Was that just because, you know, that's exactly the way you felt, that, you know what, this happened, there's nothing I can do about it, and hopefully this guy turns his life around?
It was a mix of a lot of things. The way my parents raised me is the big one, I would say. Because I've made mistakes in my life, nothing to that degree, but I've made mistakes. And when someone would forgive me, it would bring so much weight off of my shoulders. He's got things he needs to deal with. I don't want him to be so guilty. I know he is legally guilty, but I don't want him to be so morally guilty when all he has to do is be good for a few years, get out, fix his life. I don't want him to start this path and then maybe affect someone else. So I was thinking for his own good. I wasn't really thinking what I was feeling, but I was feeling that. And in the beginning of the hospital, I was saying I was happy and, oh, I'm not mad or anything, or I'm not sad, or it's the same Sean, but that was partially because there were so many cameras around and there was so much stress, and I never really had time to really come to my own. And with time away and reflection where I wasn't in the hospital and trying to avoid media or whatever it was, I came to realize that I'm actually happy with where I'm at. So I didn't realize in the beginning, but I realize now that it happened, and I'm not 100% happy that it did happen, but I'm making do. I'm at Purdue, one of my dreams, the dream school. I'm playing basketball every day and running, and I'm just having a great time with my life. And it took a long time for me to realize that, but once I did, my life got so much better. So I wanted his life to get so much better as well.
Yeah, that's really amazing. So I was interviewing a friend of mine who was paralyzed when a car hit him while he was on his bike, and he told me he realized pretty early on that while he's in the hospital, and actually even when he's out of the hospital, that he was sort of the barometer for everybody around him, that they would come in to see him, and if he was in a good mood, they could move on with their life. But if he was down, they were as paralyzed as he was, right? They just couldn't move forward with their life because he wasn't moving forward. Did you find something similar, that you sort of had to put on that brave and happy face so that people in your world could move forward?
Yeah, I've actually never heard that perspective before, but that makes so much sense because it is 100% true. I would have people coming in crying, and I'm sitting in my hospital bed thinking I'm the joker, or right, trying to make jokes, cheer them up. And that's not the way it's supposed to go. I'm the one that could be using the cheering up, not doing the cheering up.
Exactly.
But back then, I mean, back in my day, it was 2 years ago, so I think I can say that now. But I liked to make people laugh, and I liked to have the eyes on me and make people laugh and have a good time. So I used that as an opportunity to just make people laugh. And you know, I had fun. People would come in. There was a lot of visitors. It would be from visiting hours, opening in the morning to the night, every day that people were there. So I didn't get a lot of rest because of it. But yeah, it was definitely my job to make people's lives better. I didn't have a problem doing that, but realistically, I probably should have. If I wasn't so focused on being a comedian and trying to make people laugh, then that would have been very difficult on me.
What was the lowest point for you?
Lowest point for me? There's a lot of low points. Lowest point for me was, it actually was not in the hospital. I didn't even have time to think about any of that. It was when I got out of the hospital and just realized that I'm going to be like this for the rest of my life, and that's okay. But right now, it's just really, really hard.
Yeah.
I didn't have the nurses checking in on me every day. I didn't have the people texting me, hey, Sean, are you okay, or I'm going to come visit. I was alone, basically. But then I started dating someone. I'm still dating her after a year and a half. I got really close with my family. I got really close with my faith. I just like made my life turn around, and all of this was extremely difficult. With now, I need to go back to school. I need to find a college place that I need to go to. So I had a lot more stresses in my life. But I think my lowest point is not where anyone would expect a low point to be. It wasn't like an extreme depression or anything suicidal. It was just a realization that I need to get a little bit stronger mentally, but it wasn't something that I had to change completely.
Got
if that
it.
Makes any sense. I was already relatively strong.
Right. So 7 months after the accident, you're back in the track, right? Or back running a quarter on the track and running, I think, in your dad's singlet from 1979. And obviously all the media's out there. It's your first time. And I watch video of you running indoors, and you look great. How long did it take you to adapt to the running prosthetic?
Yeah, that took a long time. A lot of the professional runners you see, especially in the Paralympics, are runners who were born with one leg.
Yep, congenital
and
guys,
so
yeah.
A lot of the people that I've asked for advice were people that just kind of grew up with it, and it was made their new normal. For me, it was completely different. It went from using my heel to toe strike and pushing off with my calf and my lower thigh to a metal leg that I hope is going to be there when I place it on the ground.
Right. People forget this thing's not connected. It can come off at any time. I've seen, when back in the day watching Oscar Pistorius running the track here and when he was training in Orange County and just watching his leg fly off. And it was like, oh, my God. I mean, to have that faith that every time you go to put it down, it's going to be there that's pretty scary.
Yeah, that was the biggest thing. I can adapt with the running mechanics of it because I've been running my whole life. And I've had to adapt with, an injury or going uphill or I'm going downhill or whatever it is. So I've always had to adapt, but that was trusting it. Because I learned how to trust walking on my regular prosthetic, but trusting the running prosthetic was completely different because I had to be in motion of running. And it's built for the speed and the running aspect. It's not really built to walk. So... but once that took 2 days, whatever it was. After that, it was just trying to make sure, because my legs got really tired, trying to make sure that I brought my legs around and placed them so that I didn't just fall on my face.
Exactly.
But luckily, I learned how to do that. My coaches and my dad, who is my coach, helped me out.
And getting back on the track again and running that quarter, that had to be pretty special.
Yeah, it was really good until I looked at the time and I realized I could do
always a runner
in about two of my laps. Yeah, but no, it definitely felt good. I'm just messing around about the time. I was really impressed with my time. I was really happy.
What was your time?
I was 1:20.
People would kill to go 1:20. 1:20 for a quarter is, I mean, for you, obviously, that's not, as a guy who's running, a 4:29 mile, that's a different gig. But a 1:20 quarter, considering you running out of prosthetic for really the first time in a race, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I was definitely really happy with it. And I could tell my dad was, too. He started crying. So did my mom. So did my sister. A lot of people did.
Well, and then you got asked to prom.
Yeah, then my girlfriend asked me to prom. She actually made that up on the spot that day.
That's so
good
cool.
For her.
I love that.
Very creative.
Now, have you looked at the times for Paralympics? Is that something you're thinking about?
Yeah, I've definitely been doing some looking. To me, Paralympics is so far away for me. I've got college that I need to focus on for me right now.
Yep.
I'm still maybe potentially waiting a 4 to 6 month knee surgery.
Oh, okay.
My left knee. Actually, I've been in the wheelchair for the past 3 days now.
Oh, what'd you do to the left knee? Just overcompensating?
No, it's
from the injuries.
Torn. Yeah, from the injuries. Mm. And I've been trying to get back into it. I'm this athlete that wanted to play varsity basketball at a state championship team. And I had the skill level to do it, but I was running all season around. I was an umpire. I wanted to play baseball. I wanted to do all these sports. And now that I have all this free time that I'm not running anymore, I want to do all these sports again. So I think I'm just pushing my body a little bit too much. And it's hard because I've gotten so strong that I'm at the point where I can do this. I can go to the gym. I can play basketball. I can work out on the track at Purdue. So it's definitely really hard getting this taste of what I can do. And then my knee hurting, and then it's kind of pulling it all back away.
Right.
but it's not the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with. There's a few other things that come to mind before.
Yeah.
The inability to play basketball at a high level for one day of the week. So, but
you're playing hoops pretty much every day.
Yeah, playing hoops. I'll get a video one of these days, and I'll send it to you.
I would love it.
Not that bad.
I bet. Now, and you're playing ambulatory basketball. You're playing. You're not playing in a chair.
Oh no, I played it in the chair a little bit. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I played with the Detroit Diehards.
Yep.
Back in Detroit. So much fun. It's so hard though.
It's brutal.
I didn't realize how hard it would be because I can go in a wheelchair, but then the wheels are a little bit more curved out.
Right.
And then you say, all right, now do 5 suicides. Suicides. You mean the things that I would have to run back and forth in basketball? They're like, yeah, do it in the wheelchair.
Oh.
Like, all right. And they would just be really hard. And then they would have us go backwards. And I couldn't drive straight. It was...
yeah.
I didn't realize how hard it was until I actually did it. But I respect anyone that can do that on a high level. Definitely very dangerous and risky. But I definitely want to get back into that. But I'm playing... standing up at Purdue.
Any of the,
trying to prove people wrong.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you're playing and people see you've got a prosthetic leg, I'm sure they're thinking, oh, I can, you know, it's on his right leg. I'll take him to that side. I bet you enjoy the fact that you can prove people wrong and show them, hey, I'm missing a leg, but I can play hoops better than you.
Bob, that's the best feeling in the world right there. But that's better than anything. So at first possession, they either go really hard on me because they know they can beat me, or they go really easy on me because they don't want to beat me. It doesn't matter. I'll either stop them when they try and go really hard, or if they go really easy, then I'll just go right by them. So they learn after one play that, all right, this guy, just look at this guy from the waist up and play him like that.
Very cool. When you look back at everything that's happened in your life, you see this rollover happening tomorrow, do you still stop?
100%. Not a doubt. That could be my sister in that car. That could be my grandma. That could be the person that cures cancer. That could be, and I'm not saying I don't have any value on my life because I value my life really highly as well. But the percent, the chance of that happening again, a car wreck, there's a bunch of people every day that help people on the side of the road. There's not a lot of people that get hit or hurt. So I'm stopping it every single time, 10 times out of 10, 100 times out of 100. That could be my grandma in that car. That could be anyone that I know. And even if I don't know that person still means something to me.
Any contact with the folks who were in that car still? Or was that back at the time when they did the fundraiser?
Yeah, I've had a little bit of contact with them. We both kind of moved on to that crazy day, but they raised, I think it was they raised $2,000 at a local Buffalo Wild Wings.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. And that's something that the news really didn't pick up on. And some of the news stations kind of worded it like it was their fault.
Right.
That the accident happened in the first place. Like, I don't know why they flipped over, but people were saying it was their fault. Or they haven't done anything to help me, which isn't true because they've done so much to help me. And that's just that. I mean, I get a lot of the credit for being the good person in the story, but those people are good people. Dr. Cynthia Ray was a great person. Her family to deal with this is a great person. There's a lot of other people that kind of go unrecognized.
Sure.
And I wish these people got more attention for it.
Well, the cool part is the fact that you're visible, the fact that you're out there, it keeps Dr. Cynthia Ray's name out there. It obviously allows you to tell the real story and let people know that, hey, things happen. Who knows if they had a flat tire, if they were avoiding something in the road, there was a rollover. And you jumped in along with Dr. Cynthia Ray to try to help your fellow man, just help somebody out who was in a tough time. So... I really respect what you did, Sean, and the fact that just how you've handled this right from the very beginning, how you handled it in court with Keith Martin. you are a lot more mature than people twice and three times your age to be able to put this in perspective. And obviously what we do through Challenge Athletes Foundation is, you know, we provide that piece, as you know, that piece of equipment changes everything, right?
Yeah.
Insurance doesn't cover a lot of anything that's athletic, and you're finding out every day how important sport is.
Yep, 100%. Sport, I don't think I could survive without it. Whether it's watching or playing, I need to do something other than that. And that's a weird addiction to have, but it is.
It's a great addiction. It's the best thing there is, man. Well, I can't wait to follow your journey and see what sports you do next. You know, I'd love to get you out here for our San Diego Triathlon Challenge in October if you can get away for school for a weekend. You would love it. We have surf clinics. We do amputee running clinics. You name it. It's a full weekend of stuff. I think you would really dig it.
I'd love to do that. Let's see if I can get on my second ever plane ride.
What?
See if I can do that.
You've only been on a plane once?
I've been on it once. I'm purposely bringing this up so my parents hear this so that they want me to go.
October,
24-hour drive.
Circle this on your calendar, October 20th, 18th, 19th, and 20th. We will make that happen to get you out here to San Diego for a weekend you'll never forget.
Awesome. Hopefully my dad doesn't decide to drive like we did to Florida that one time.
Oh, my God. Isn't that child abuse? I think that's child abuse.
Something like that.
There's no statute of limitations on that, Sean. You can go after the guy and get ownership of the singlet.
Awesome. I will take that.
Love it. Hey, Sean, thank you so much for taking time and chatting. Really a pleasure to get to meet you over the phone. And I'm serious about that October 20th weekend. We would take care of bringing you out here. And the great thing is there'll be 120 other challenge athletes with all sorts of challenges. Hunter Woodhull. Actually, my next interview today is with Hunter. So he actually came on this show, and we talked about the fact that, wait a second, you're not getting any scholarship offers? You're the number one quarter miler in Utah, number five in the country out of high school, and you're getting no offers? And then we got him to a high school meet in New York, and New York Times wrote an article, and next thing you know, he had scholarship offers from Arkansas and UCLA and USC and colleges all over the country. So, you know, and he's a first Division I, first amputee to get a Division I scholarship. So things are changing every day, more and more opportunities.
Yep. Thank you so much for the opportunity. And tell Hunter I said hi, but I would love to. I'll definitely come October 20th.
You got it.
I promise.
I love it. Sean English has been our guest. Again, we're brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, by Polar, Blood, Sweat, and Data, CaliforniaTriathlon.org, five great 2019 race options, including Viking Dash Trail Run LA on April 7th, by our Challenge Athletes Foundation this last year. 2,806 grants, totaling $4.3 million. Keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. And check out any of our interviews on iTunes or Babbittville.com. And as always, endurance lives here.